If you haven't played Paddy Power Fantasy yet, you're missing out. But on the upside, if you haven't played it yet, you qualify for a risk-free first go. Get up to £20 back as cash when you play Paddy Power Fantasy. And because every NFL game day is a season in itself, you don't have to wait to find out if you've won. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. New customer offer, min £5, max £20 refund. T's and C's apply. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us, as we know now, who is going to be in Super Bowl 54, as well as us. Of course, we're flying over on Sunday, dropping shows all week long, including three live shows from South Beach. More of that news that will roll out on our social media channels shortly. But Kansas City and San Francisco are going to be there, and we will break down how they got there with none other than the great Iron Mike. Welcome back to ESPN HQ. I'm Mike.
Hey, it's nice to be here. Always good. Sometimes I forget what you look like.
Really?
Well, we do the podcast normally, just audio, and, you know, it's like, anyway. Be thankful for small mercies.
I was waiting for it.
I should really.
It took a while. You should be working on it. You do 5 or 10 minutes at a few open mic nights. I would imagine you always, when we do a show together and we're not in the same room, you have a framed photo of me there, surely, so you can just project.
Actually, you know what? Right above my desk, I have a photo of the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, right.
Which is similar. You know?
Thanks very much. Mike, there's a lot to get into. Obviously, we'll break down the two championship games and quite a lot of news flying around as well. I want to get your perspective on that's happened over the last week. Let's start with a question for you about the NFC championship game. While you were watching it, did you attempt in the comfort of your own living room more passes than Jimmy Garoppolo did during the game? Just out of curiosity.
I tell you, I've made more passes in a bar than Jimmy Garoppolo did, and fewer of them were complete. So that would be the better analogy.
Right.
No, I just thought, you know, they're fine with running it. And one of the things I tweeted out as I was watching it, when years ago, I used to do Big Ten and Notre Dame games for Eurosport.
Yeah, right.
And, Raheem Mostert was playing for Purdue, and we usually got the second or third choice game from the Big Ten Network. So we saw Purdue quite a bit, and they were usually overmanned in those days by the Big Ten teams. So teams would key on Raheem Mostert because they knew he was an explosive player. And when he came out, his draft reports kind of said special teams guy, kickoff returns, that kind of stuff.
He was quite unfancied, wasn't he?
Gadget player. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not fancied. They were kind of like Richie James, sort of, the kick returner for San Francisco. Mm. But Mostert was bigger. He's a running back. Mm. And I felt so glad that Kyle Shanahan came along and said, this guy can be an explosive runner in our offense, and gave him an offense that he could shine in, you know, and, what a great game. You know, if you'd told me, if I hadn't seen the games, and I woke up Monday morning and someone said, oh, 220 yards rushing, quarterback only threw 8 passes. Right. I said, gee, Tennessee won again.
Yeah. Well, right. There you go. We'll get into that in a minute. Staying on the 49ers Packers. Well, it wasn't as good a game by any stretch of the imagination. A complete performance, really, defensively from the 49ers. But offensively, with the focus on the run, again, is this something that they can keep on rolling in the Super Bowl? They're going to have to change the record.
That's going to be the interesting thing. And they don't necessarily have to change the record, because when you think about it, their passing game depends on play action anyway. So if they start with the running game and go to play action, or even if they just start with play action, because one of the things that people don't realize is play action doesn't necessarily need to have an effective running game to make it work. You just have to have a running game.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Like the defense has to react
to the,
so they may look to do that more, thinking that Kansas City may well be trying to be stacking to stop the run. But as you saw with Steve Spagnuolo's game plan against Tennessee, they did stop the run pretty effectively, and at the same time didn't give Tennessee a whole lot to throw to. In a sense, San Francisco's offense is kind of like New Orleans' play action game. Mm. It's a layered passing game, not a downfield one necessarily. So, you know, it could work really well. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the second level, basically, of the Kansas City defense, where maybe, you know, theoretically they're more vulnerable. But, you know, both these teams, the interesting thing is how they've turned around in the second half of the season. Mm. And in both cases, mostly because of getting injury free at key positions, and in Kansas City's case, adding Terrell Suggs, who had another, you know, one big play, but that's pretty much why he's there.
Well, quite. The Packers were disappointing, and they have been in many respects for a lot of the season. Last week against Seattle, they seemed to be much more in rhythm. Certainly the offense seemed to be much more in rhythm than it had been, which I think gave a false sense of security that this would be a closer game than it was. Were you disappointed, obviously disappointed in how the Packers performed, but were you surprised in how they just didn't turn up?
Oh, yeah, I mean, how they didn't turn up, for sure. I thought they would score in the first, you know, they always do. I mean, the whole season, they've been a good first quarter team. Last week, they were a good first half team, you know, and then they would hang on. And I put part of that down to sort of like running with a scripted set of plays and not being so good in the breakdown because Rodgers doesn't have a second receiver to throw to, basically. You know, and the guys try hard, but they can't get themselves open all the time. He needs time for guys like Kumerow and, Lazard. They're all big receivers who can't jump off the line and get open quickly. So that was disappointing. But against Seattle, they were preternaturally good on third down.
Yes.
And they were awful on third down, you know, and Spags knew that. I mean, they came at them hard in a passing down, knowing that Green Bay would want to pass. And you couldn't cut Devontae Adams out of the game, but they cut him out of the first half. And that was the key part, you know. And I'm looking here right in front of me is by the last 2 minutes of the first half to me were the game. They're up 20-0, right? And Gould kicks the field goal, just under 2 minutes to play. Then Irvin muffs the kickoff. So they start at the 2 yard line. Rodgers comes back, hits Lazard for 20. Think, okay, Green Bay's back in business now. They'll put points on the board. So what happens? They go offside. And then he's intercepted. He tries to throw deep. He's intercepted by, Emmanuel Mosley, who had a really good game too with Witherspoon benched and he was taking his place. And then they get the ball. It's first and 10 at the 30. And what do they do with, you know, under 2 minutes to go, like a minute and 20 at this point? They run the ball. They run the ball three times and they get a touchdown. You know, 30 yards, three runs at that point of the game. And then the game's over. 27-0. The game's over. And,
all the way back to, I think it was the first Green Bay drive of the game when they decided to punt as opposed to go for it on fourth down. Now, this is something that we've talked about a lot during the season, situational play, when it's the right time to do that. But it felt that the momentum that they had built on that drive and the fact that you knew, much like in the Kansas City-Tennessee game, the Titans knew that the Chiefs were going to put points on them. So it seemed to be an odd decision to be so conservative.
It was conservative, but I think what LaFleur was thinking was they had stopped San Francisco on the first possession. They could stop them again. They weren't going to be run over. They weren't looking at San Francisco as being an offensive team that was going to run over and play. So he figured they would play easy, bottle them up.
He got that one wrong.
Play even. Yeah, he got that one a bit wrong. You know, he didn't get a great punt either, which, you know, if you back them up inside the 10, then you're sitting in a better position. But I don't think he was feeling it was gamble time at that point. I think he thought he was still in an even game, which he never was. And I said something on Friday in my column, which was, picking the two games. They both had identical spreads at 7.5.
They did, yeah.
I thought San Francisco Green Bay was probably a more competitive game. I was wrong. But I actually thought Tennessee had a better shot of winning. Because the difference being, in Tennessee's case, they had to follow one scenario. I saw two scenarios for the game, and the second scenario is what played out. But if Kansas City had been able to follow that first scenario, they did build up a lead. If they could have kept that lead for a little bit longer, they were in a position where they could have won that game. But they couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes.
Well, they couldn't stop Mahomes, but they also, the game plan changed. And the offensive line in particular, which was really dominant, certainly for the first quarter, for a lot of the first half, the trenches battle was won clearly by Kansas City in the second half, and whether that forced them to deviate from the run or not, but three carries for 7 yards is all Derrick Henry had in the second half. So what do you make of that change?
It's kind of like Baltimore the week before. When do you go away from what got you there?
Right.
And I think in Tennessee's case, Baltimore certainly, I think, went away too early from the run game. I think in Tennessee's case, they felt they had to start passing the ball because they weren't getting as much running as they should have.
And increasingly having to chase the game, of course.
Yeah, and that's why you need, you know, they're not built to come from behind, really. No team that depends on one big running back usually is. And That's what my second scenario was. If the Chiefs take a 2-touchdown lead, all of a sudden Tennessee's in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. They can't adjust their game. And having Chris Jones back was huge for Kansas City because, you know, every time he played, he was disrupting inside. And, Frank Clark had, you know, said some stuff about Derrick Henry being
not that
easy
hard
to tackle.
Exactly,
yeah. Frank Clark was proven right, as it were. And you know who was great tackling? And he probably won't get a lot of credit, but Daniel Sorensen. Mm. He made two open field tackles in the first half that saved them big yardage. One of them was on Henry, just like he did on that fake punt the week before.
Right.
You know, he was a sure tackler, and that's why he's playing. Thornhill's out, obviously, so he's playing. He's not the greatest guy in pass coverage, as we saw when he fell over on one downfield move. But he is a sure tackler, and I think he deserves some, you know, attention for that.
The Titans defense deserves some attention for the lack of tackling on the Mahomes touchdown. I mean, and it cuts to Vrabel afterwards, who was just forlorn, and, you know, my God, credit to Mahomes for one of the seminal playoff plays, I think, in the history of the game. It was an exceptional run, but it was to some degree gifted to him as well by the Titans tackling.
Yeah, you know, I think of Mahomes, and I think of something I've examined ever since the days I watched Walt Frazier play point guard for the New York Knicks, that great players have this sense of time whereby things move around them in slow motion.
Absolutely right.
And this is what Mahomes has. Rodgers is like the prototype Mahomes, you know, that calm in the pocket, drop back and see what's going on. I think, there was a good bit of commentary about Mahomes not watching the receiver as much as watching the defensive back. So he puts the ball where the defensive back can't get it because he knows where the receiver on that run. He shook the first tackle. He dead-legged him, basically. It was a bad tackle, yes, but he shook the tackle. And then he looked and realized he had space. Mm-hmm. And there was no excitement about it. There was no hurry up about it. He just accelerated a little bit.
Yeah.
He can't, and then when he got near the goal line, he picked up a block of sorts, and then all of a sudden he became tough guy.
Yeah.
And he spun through two tackles and went across the goal line. I just thought it was the most beautiful play to watch.
It really was.
I would, you know, and
it's a really interesting theory. The great sportsmen that make everything seemingly slow down around them. And what others, I remember watching, in his latter stages of his career, watching Teddy Sheringham when he was at West Ham. And he was, you know, maybe in the last couple of years of his career.
Had to be West Ham, didn't it? I'm talking to the peanut gallery here.
Hey, this is to get older. This is the reference what I go with.
I was thinking you were going to say someone more like Liam Brady.
No, he was a great player too. Yeah. It was a brilliant play from Mahomes. And it was, I think, would you say it was one of the greatest playoff plays of all time? You love watching it. Would you say it ranks up there? Have we got a Mike Top 5 coming up?
Well, we went through that, didn't we, with the conference championship games, the best games.
Yes, the best games.
The best plays.
The best plays. Yeah.
I mean, it is a fantastic play. I mean, there's been a whole lot of them. But it was one of those, I think, as a feat of individual brilliance, I think it has to rate really high up there, you know, as a sort of unplanned but improvised play. I think that, you know, it has to rank up there with the best.
Timing wise as well, because you got to factor that in, right? When you talk about great plays, is obviously the execution and the skill on show with the play itself, but also the significance of it, right?
Yeah, and at a time when Tennessee's thinking, okay, we've got this offense slowed down a bit, we can control them, and then Mahomes makes it, and I thought it was an excellent piece of analysis by Tony Romo, because it showcased what Mahomes does. He figured it out. You know, Tennessee came out playing a defense. He had one series of downs. He figured out where the openings were going to be. They were going to be on the outside. And then I think he answered Tracy Wilson tried to answer the question for him. It was one of those 40-second questions that includes every possible answer to it. But he managed to say that he knew that the outside was there because they had the three linebackers were dropping. But in other words, he was aware of what the opportunity would be if he had to take it, and he took it.
It was a great question, by the way. I did enjoy that. I thought of you when I was watching that being asked. The Titans started strongly, and everything was going to plan. But conversely, the Chiefs started erratically for the second time in as many weeks.
When Kelce dropped the pass on the first series, I thought, "Oh, here we go again." This is exactly what happened in the week before.
Is that a concern when you think about we just talked about the composure of Mahomes So on the one hand, you wouldn't think it's going to necessarily phase it, but you know, the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl, right? Is it concerned that the Chiefs, with all this talent and with all their second half acceleration and dominance, that there's a danger they could start the Super Bowl
shaking? Sometimes seem like a very undisciplined team.
Yeah.
And that's true of Andy Reid teams in general. They took a lot of stupid penalties in this game.
Right.
Three offside penalties in a row.
But there were a lot of penalties in the first game. Same officiating crew as in the regular season game, and there are a lot of penalties
yeah,
there as
Tony
well.
Tony Corrienti. Yeah, he has to have a lot of penalties. He always has to. Really, yeah. Honestly, yeah. They always have to.
Just don't get Gab Marcotti on the subject of him. He's not a fan.
There were a couple of plays where receivers turned. Mahomes had the ball as the receiver was turning, and they couldn't. Watkins had one bounced off of Hill's shoulder as they made the turn on the cut. There was another that Watkins barely caught. There was that wonderful one with Darwin Thompson when he came out of the backfield and he wasn't looking.
Yes, yeah.
And again, Romo was all over. You know, when you get that release, you either block or you release. If you release, you have to know that the guy you're not blocking is going to be on top of the quarterback in about a second and a half. So you have to look for the ball, and Darwin Thompson hits
it. When you were playing, I bet it did. I bet at least once, right?
No,
back of the helmet.
Never.
No, big hit in the back as opposed to in the end zone. Yeah. Might as well.
And who was it who they had in K-Pass? K-Pass was down in pass defense on one. Spagnuolo has his defensive end covering the pass, and it literally hit him in the back of the helmet. And said, way to break that up. You know? It was like, he had no idea.
Why is this discipline an issue, you know, when you've got such an experienced head coach?
Well, you know, it's always been that way with Andy Reid. He's a very easygoing in some ways guy, I think, and the team plays because they enjoy playing. He's always been bad at clock management. He hired assistants to help him with that over the years.
He got the challenge right though yesterday.
He got the challenge right.
Just, yeah, I like the delivery as
that
well.
That was a tough
challenge.
One too. Because the NFL, my gut instinct is they're always going to say no.
Yeah,
you know,
it was a brave one. Did you like the way he executed that as well? Just the cool hand Luke stuff. I mean, talk about Mahomes being composed.
I was thinking about that play the week before where Williams put the ball down at the defender's feet, and they called him for an unsportsmanlike taunting.
Yes, right.
I was thinking Andy should go over and put it at the referee, the flag at the referee's foot, and see if they dare call him for taunting the referees.
But how would you throw if you were a coach?
The other thing with the Chiefs, Mike, is with Mahomes a quarterback, you're relaxed. The whole team's relaxed because they think, we're always in the game, so that tends to work. How would I throw it? I'd throw it right at the referee's head.
Would you?
Yeah, remember when Jeff Triplett killed Orlando Brown's career? You know, by throwing the flag and hitting him in the eye. I'd aim every time.
Would you?
Yeah.
Actually, that's quite rude to take his eye out. I'd maybe just kind of land on his head.
Well, whatever. I wouldn't aim for the eye necessarily.
No, just on the head.
Just for the head.
On top of the head. We've got to give credit to, actually I want to talk a bit more on the Chiefs and give credit to the Titans about the Spags and about the development in this defense that has been remarkable over the last
seven, if they win the Super Bowl, Spags should go to the Hall of Fame based on two games. The 07 Super Bowl and that Super Bowl. Yeah. And two things have happened.
What's changed?
Two things have happened basically. One is he's come in and it took a while, I think, for them to adapt to the different kind of defense that he was playing, because it can be a complicated one. You saw the way they're moving around, not like the Titans who move at the last instant and do a great job of that, but they do move around. And secondly, was they got players back that they needed to get back. Chris Jones being the kid, but Dee Ford was injured this time. Dee Ford and Suggs, now they actually have pass rush that teams have to contend with. Mm-hmm. That makes a big difference. They lost Thornhill, who I think is a really good player. But so far that hasn't come back to bite them.
And all week long we heard, defense might be better, but they're very weak against the run. That's their Achilles heel. Weak against the run. They look pretty good against the run.
They looked pretty good. I mean, Mike Pinnell, I thought you remember back in March when the Jets released him, I said, Patriots are going to sign him. And they did, but they cut him because they only needed three big fat tackles and they had three guys they liked better. But Pinnell's a good player. I mean, for what he does, you know, you want to run stuffer inside. You don't play him every snap. He's not a three down guy, but he did really well in this one, especially when in short yardage situations. And again, Romo's such a good commentator, you know, and he just saw right away they're in short yard, they're in goal line. They were in goal line on third and one against the Titans, and it worked.
Why don't you think, Romo, just on Romo, why don't you think we've seen that before? Somebody analyzing the game and calling ahead of time what's going to happen.
He wasn't calling ahead of time, which is good in a sense because he's not he's not showboating in a way, but he's doing the kind of analysis you need.
Certainly in kind of contemporary broadcasting has popularized that. Was he the first one to do that, really?
I think it's because he has faith in what he's going to say, mm-hmm. and they don't seem to hold him back. Mm-hmm. I think Nance does a really good job with him and trying to encourage that, kind of play along with it, mm-hmm. and, you know, whether they're talking in the downtime or not, but I think, you know, it seems like a back and forth. I mean, at times he was tripping in this game. He was being funny. I mean, you know, he was making all these off the wall kind of comments. Right, right. I'm thinking, that's not Tony Romo, most of the time, but he's having a great time out there.
He seems to be absolutely loving it.
How many quarterbacks have become commentators and they don't really tell you what the quarterback sees beforehand?
Right. This is my point. Know? Why not? Because most of them must be able to see that. But this is what, as you say, no faith. No conviction in terms of...
I think that's it. They're more afraid of being wrong. Yeah.
Then, you're hung out to dry. We've got to give a line on the Titans because it's been a hell of a run.
Oh, yeah. And run being the operative word.
Yeah, you see what I did there. So where do they go? Because they've got some big decisions to make in terms of personnel. Tannehill for one?
That's a really good question because Tannehill's value will probably never be higher. Mm. And he's a good fit for what they want to do. You saw some of the limitations when he's forced to be a pocket passer,
yeah.
which aren't huge, you know, but yeah. you saw that at Miami where he was a little bit streaky as a passer inside. He's much better coached right now, I think, and it's a better situation. Derrick Henry's going to need money. That's coming up. They've built a really strong team. I mean, in almost all areas, they're going to be better next year receiving as well, with Smith being a year more experienced, you know, and they need
AJ Brown. You mean
AJ Brown? Did I say Smith? Yeah.
But I'm glad you mentioned Smith because surprised that he wasn't one of those voguish coordinators being considered for. Well, he might have been. We don't know the full shortlist for the head coaching gigs, but in terms,
he's
of,
very very low profile.
Yeah, he is. But watching the game yesterday, if you think about some of the things that he did, I mean, the direct snap again, he went to that, bringing Mariota in for that play. Mixing it up, you know, so if in the hands of another coordinator, a more fashionable coordinator, it'd be, look at his box of tricks, how innovative he is, but he seems to go very much under the radar.
But I think being in his first year sort of as coordinator and it's not ready for a head, you know, not ready for prime time is the way people are looking at it.
Right.
I mean, you have two other coordinators, Eric Bieniemy for Kansas City. Now he is in Reed's shadow, and that's part of the reason why he doesn't get a job, because everyone has the perception it's Reed who's running the offense and calling the offense. And Robert Salah.
What is the balance with Bieniemy?
I mean, people should have been looking at him because I think not only is he a good coordinator, but he's got that leadership quality that people will want. What is the balance? I can't be sure. Mm. Reed always gives him a ton of credit. Mm. But it tends to be Reed who's got the chart in front of him, you know, and, but, you know, what you hear around the league, other people say the same thing, that Bieniemy's a really, you know, really good coach, really good guy. He was when he was a player, you know, and hopefully they get looks in next time. You know, as we've talked about with hires like Stefanski, I think last week, it's not being a smart coordinator and a good coordinator doesn't necessarily make you a good head coach. A lot depends on what situation you're moving into as to what the head coach is required to do because it's more than coordinating and loads of coaches are not necessarily great coordinators. They leave that to their coordinators, but they're good head coaches.
Do you think Stefanski is the right fit for, I'm kidding with you.
We did that one
twice now. Let's talk Jason Garrett.
Speaking of coordinators
and better coordinators than
a couple of them. There's been a couple of them around the league.
Garrett
this
New
weekend.
York, is he a good example of what you just said, that he's better off as a coordinator? I mean, we don't really know yet, do we?
That's a good question because he hasn't been a coordinator for a long time and when he was, it was perceived as being just sort of a system kind of coordinator. He was Dallas's coach for a specific reason. He didn't take the spotlight away from Jerry Jones down in Jonestown in Venezuela.
Yeah.
This is what happens when we have four hours sleep. He kept a team on an even keel, which is often a very explosive team. Dallas has always, you know, had personalities and conflicts and things like that. He kept that on an even keel.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were looking at him as being a future Giants head coach this year.
There was buzz about it when they filed Sherman.
For that reason, the Giants love continuity. Mm. What he brings to the Giants, I'm not sure.
Dallas playbook for one.
Yeah, but you know, do they need someone who can groom Daniel Jones better? Is he going to be good for that? I mean, he was a quarterback, you remember, and one of limited talent, but much more success than his talent, you know, would assume you to, or would lead you to assume.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. Or is it someone to help Joe Judge? And I think given what we know or what we assume about his personality, I think he's just the kind of guy who will be good at helping Joe Judge at doing the head coach stuff he needs to do, telling him about the pratfalls, giving him advice, sure, that kind of thing. And Judge can leave the offense to him,
yeah,
you know, more or less.
Without being a coordinator grabbing the spotlight because he's also,
I think Garrett will be a kind of fit into guy. Similarly, I think Shurmur has landed on his feet in Denver.
Mm. Just on, before we get to Shurmur, just on Garrett, when he finally was put out of his misery at Dallas, what was interesting was how much affection there was for him from the Dallas media. Stories came out, and there was one in particular that one of the Dallas Cowboys beat writers, or maybe it was a radio guy actually, but had mentioned that Garrett had been to see his sick son. He had a son who was terminally ill, and Garrett, without any pomp or ceremony or look at me, had been to see him a number of times. So I don't care whatever you think of him as a head coach, this is the kind of man he is. So, yeah.
And that's what, back in the World League days, when I was doing World League starting in the mid-90s, you know, Garrett had played in the first iteration of the World League, and his brother Judd had played as well. And that's what everybody said.
Yeah.
You know, what nice people they were, what good people they were.
Yeah.
And that's important. That's an important characteristic. One way or the other, you have to motivate a team.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like the stick and the carrot. And for years, because football's a physical game, the stick was the preferred method by, you know, you're going back to Bear Bryant, Vince Lombardi. You treat them really tough because they have to be tough when the going gets tough, the tough, you know, blah, blah, blah. And nowadays you can't, that's a harder approach to take. And coaches have to be a little bit more, you know, empathetic with players. Young people demand it.
It's a really interesting point. I mean, it's not unique to the NFL, right? This is something that is true across all kinds of workplaces. So it's logical that NFL coaching styles have to adapt.
Yeah. And, I used to look at it in World League. We had two diametrically opposed kind of attitudes from the coach in Amsterdam, Al Luganville, and the coach in Barcelona, Jack Bicknell. And Jack would do well if he had a team that responded to that. In other words, a mature team with leaders, a team that didn't have a couple of bad eggs on it. Al would do well with most of his teams. And if they didn't do well, he would blame it on a couple of bad eggs.
Right.
Although he had bad eggs and did well, you know, but it was that difference. And, quick story. He had a second year guy in World League, a scrimmage in Atlanta in preseason, and, Barcelona had scrimmaged Amsterdam. And after the game, the Barcelona players shower and the Amsterdam players are running gassers on the field. He's got, you know, wind sprints. And I'm talking to Jack, and Tom Robsock, who was their center, comes out and he says, "Watch this." He says, "Robo, come here." And he's got his gear. He says, "Go get the rest of your gear. I just traded you to Amsterdam." And Robsock looks across the field at the Amsterdam players running wind sprints, looks back at Bicknell, and his face drops like that. He said, "I'm just kidding you." I've never seen a coach do anything half as funny in my life.
Oh, brilliant. Love that. You were going to talk Shurmur as well before I really interrupted you.
Yeah, Shurmur, I think he's landed on his feet because it's a great situation for him. With an up-and-coming young quarterback, I think Drew Locke showed enough in the last few games of the season to make you think he's going to be good. He'll be able to run the kinds of West Coast-y kinds of things that Locke should be able to execute based on what he did at Missouri. I think Elway, you know, will appreciate that, will be supportive of that. Vic Fangio obviously is a defensive guy, so he'll be given his head there. And I think Shurmur's one of those guys. Garrett may be another. Like I said, they can be very good offensive coordinators. And they're just not built to be the head coach, you know, of an NFL team, for whatever reason.
He locks the guy then. That's interesting.
Yeah, I assume Locke's the guy.
They think he's the guy. What do you think of him?
I think he can be really good. I thought they got it was a good draft pick by Elway. You know, better than signing Joe Flacco for a lot of money. Mm. I mean, I understand they need a stopgap sort of to give him a transition period, but he fits what they want to do much better than Joe Flacco did.
Another story I want to ask you about, whether people are reading too much into this or not. Philip Rivers, who stayed in San Diego after the Chargers moved to LA, has sold out and is
Yeah, there was a great children, there was a great tweet from Sam Farmer on the LA Times when somebody hot take from one of the hot take merchants.
Yeah.
Philip Rivers is moving out of San Diego, and Sam Farmer says the Chargers did that last year.
Sure, and apparently buying bought up or moving to Florida. So look, I think we're all.
A couple of years ago, everyone said he wanted to go to Tennessee when Tennessee sort of had a quarterback opening or might have had, or to Carolina because he played at NC State.
Yeah, of course.
And he would probably like to be there. I'm not sure what opening would fit him at this point. Yeah. I think one of the big takeaways of this weekend is that the new generation of quarterbacks has taken over from the old. Aaron Rodgers is now the poster boy for old quarterbacks who still play, but they've been passed by the young bloods. So Tom Brady obviously is in that group. Eli's now is in that group. Rivers is probably in that group as well.
Recency bias. Everyone was hyping up. Breeze wasn't affected by that, but then the last game he is all of a sudden.
And I thought it was really weird. People are saying Brady will go to San Diego if Rivers is gone. I mean, what does San Diego gain by that? If anything, Rivers is equally as immobile as Brady, but has more arm left, and stands up more. If I were San Diego, I'd probably go with Tyrod Taylor for the year and draft a quarterback with the 5 or 6 pick, because there will be a quarterback there at 5 or 6 if you believe in Justin Herbert or Tua. You also had Brady from, not Greg Brady, from LSU going to Carolina, which I thought was one of the great pickups. He's been in the NFL as an assistant, a quarterback's coach. He obviously did a great job with Joe Burrow. And I think, Matt Rhule, it's a really smart hire, a young, skilled offensive coordinator who can get away from Matt Rhule stuff if he has to, will be free to do that. And you saw what he did, what the difference he made at LSU, was immense.
Yep.
And I think that was a good, and then the other one, was Jeff Olson, who was the nominal GM at Houston. After they had the clear out.
Chris Olson.
Chris Olson was and the other one was Chris Olson, who was the nominal GM at Houston. He was basically their salary cap guy, keep things balanced. And he survived the original clear out, but they leaked it during the games on Sunday that he was gone.
Just burying it.
I think that was Jeff Easterby who came from the Patriots, where he was like the team, not chaplain, but he was like the spiritual advisor and he's in charge of morale, among other things, at Houston. So Bill O'Brien has now taken over the team completely as he's going to be de facto general manager. But Easterby is a Christian pastor. I mean, what do you do when you leak a guy's firing? Doesn't he deserve at least, face to face? I'm sorry, we're going to let you go, and announce it properly.
No, particularly charitable. Yeah. He's in charge of the spiritual well-being of the team?
Well, it's in Houston, they say he's in charge of the team culture. But in New England, he had a strange title. It wasn't spiritual advisor, but it was something along the.
I've never heard that. Does every team have one?
No. This was something built for him, basically. Yeah. It's not that he's not a football guy completely, but I think coming off, the timing is awful because coming off of that playoff game, you question whether you want to put Bill O'Brien even more in charge of everything.
Sure,
they built themselves a decent team that got them into the playoffs, but he's 2-4 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He had that moment where he should have gone for it on fourth down, and afterwards he said, I didn't have a play ready. You're the head coach. Yeah. You have to have a play ready. The play should be ready on Tuesday. The play's not ready on game day. The play's ready on Tuesday, and you're practicing for that situation. So I just thought that was, I feel a bit sorry for him.
Yeah.
Hopefully he comes up somewhere else with a job, but, it's the merry-go-round picks up speed now,
Yes.
And I think some teams will possibly regret not waiting a little bit longer to make their moves. Everybody is always in a rush. They want to have the extra time to build a staff, to get things ready, to get things going, to get things ready. But, I just have this feeling that there's a couple of guys involved in this game, the Super Bowl, who might be worthy of a head coaching job, if that's what it's.
Salah's a great shout on that front. Speaking of which, We're heading to Miami, Mike. So next time you and I are working together, it's going to be on South Beach.
Yeah. And, you know, I may spare you the suntanned, you know, DK Metcalf imitation. You
I'm
know?
Expecting at least one of your Hawaiian shirts.
I said, maybe I'll do that.
Oh,
that
please that, bring that, your Hawaiian
that will, shirts. That will be, the listeners that will be a useful one. And it'll be nice to be down there, on a Friday, you know, on a weekday when things are still happening and in the sun, you know, it'd be fantastic.
And you must have some good hot tips for Miami as well.
Actually, I don't, to be, I've only been there once in my life, which was back in March. It's funny because the way things worked out, I went to Minnesota the summer before the Super Bowl, and now I went to Miami in the spring before the Super Bowl. From my my niece was getting married, but it was mostly we were doing family stuff, and I didn't, if you can get out of Miami, I've got I went down the Keys, yeah. You know, and so I can tell you where you can find alligators to, you know, to walk around with, and
that's amazing.
A great kind of Caribbean restaurant, and I did there is in Homestead, Florida, there's a place called the Seminole Theater, and they had, I'm trying to remember who it was they had there just after I left. Eric Anderson was there just after I left, and they've got a Sleep at the Wheel the day I'm leaving, so I can't go see a Sleep at the Wheel. Sleep at the Wheel, they were a Texas swing band, big in the 60s, rock and roll, but based on Texas swing, a guy called Ray Kitchen. I saw them when I was in college. And they're still touring.
They're still going.
It's great. And Ray Kitchen's still the front man. So,
hey,
you know,
they might be one of J-Lo and Shakira's guests on the halftime show.
I wish they would do the hat. I mean, I'd so like they. The NFL unlikely to put me in charge of anything. But
you and Jay-Z programming the halftime show.
Yeah, me and Jay-Z together could put together a decent show. You know. And did you see, if you weren't watching I was watching on Game Pass, so I was watching the American commercials, but with Anquan Boldin, they did a great commercial, along the lines of Black Lives Matter.
Really?
And community work, which is nice because, yes, you know, I kept watching and saying, okay, mention Colin Kaepernick, you know, but the league has taken this initiative, you know, to try to defuse the situation a bit. So at least that's a semi-positive step. I'd like it more if Colin Kaepernick was playing again.
Is that the influence, in all seriousness, of Jay-Z, do you think? Or do you think that was a token?
Well, Jay-Z was part of that. The NFL decided they did have to address this. Yeah. You know, they're not gonna give Colin Kaepernick the win by putting, you know, by addressing it via him, which I wish they would simply do and let him play. Yeah. But they are taking steps to address it, and they deserve some credit for that.
Indeed. Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for breaking down the games for us and all the other big news as well.
Yeah, I hope you are able to do your week in Miami before I get there, you know, without feeling too much loss.
Going to struggle with you, but we'll just do what we said at the top of the show, that I'll phone you every day or Skype, and we can chat, and you can have, if I can't get on Skype and it's a phone call, you can have the frame with my photo, and I'll get one of you, and it'll be like, we're together. It'll be great. It'll be fine. The Bert and Ernie of NFL broadcast.
Stadler and Waldorf is more like
you are
like
definitely
it.
Bert, by the way.
I'm definitely Waldorf.
Which one's which out of Statler?
That's a good question. I don't know why I claimed. I just like the name better.
I'm going to have to. I'll look that up on the flight. I'll have an answer for you by the time.
Why does it matter? They're each as bad as the other.
My favorite was
Wadler and Staldorf.
This is the worst show I've ever seen. He says, you weren't here last week.
When they had the chicken.
Oh, who's the chicken, Adam? And let's stop rolling right now.